Welcome, everybody. My name is David Hayes. I'm the Deputy Secretary of the Interior Department, and I'm co-chairing this session with Anesh Chopra, whom the President identified as the Chief Technology Officer for the nation. That's pretty good for the nation. Anesh, of course, as some of you may know, has had quite an interesting history in private and public sectors, and was recently was Chief Technology Officer for the Commonwealth of Virginia. I'm really looking forward to this session in particular, and I want to thank all of you for being here. First, let me identify a couple other ringers in the room besides you legitimate CEO types. Bill Corr is the Deputy Secretary at the Department of Health and Human Services. Ron Sims is the Deputy Secretary at Housing and Urban Development, former executive of King County in Washington State. David Holway is our union representative here, National Association.
Keep an eye on all of you.
And we have behind us a number of the CIOs and technology officers from our agencies who are going to be listening in. I should mention the deputy secretaries at the cabinet agencies, Bill, Ron, and I, we're the chief operating officers, the number two folks for our agencies. So we're very interested in learning what we can. This is what we try to do every day, is improve our customer service and deal with technology, and it's quite a ride. So we're really, really interested in getting your points of view. Now, just in terms of logistics, the plan is going to be to spend most of the time just in open brainstorming session with you folks. You know, we have a topic that I am particularly interested in, I think, and I know that Bill and Ron are too, in terms of customer service and how technology can help or hinder customer service. And just very quickly, Interior Department, you may not think of as a customer service oriented department, but we have 400 million Americans visiting our national parks and our public lands every year. We have trust responsibilities for 2 million American Indians. We've done a lousy job of tracking money for them, and have been in litigation with 300,000 class members of individual Indians whose trust accounts we have not been tracking well. Their customers were not serving well. We have 40,000 Indians in our schools at the Department of the Interior. And this is true for every department in the federal government. It's really quite remarkable how many customers we have of different types that don't immediately come to mind, and if useful, we can talk about that in the hour or so we've got together. But we're really here to learn from you all, because we know that all of us, I think, certainly appointed officials, have been in the private sector, and we come to the government knowing we can learn from the private sector, and we know we can learn from you. The plan is Anesh is going to talk about the homework assignment a little bit and give a sense of kind of collectively where you guys came out on these questions. Then we're going to get into that assignment and talk about the issues you thought that were most important in terms of prioritizing that assignment. What we want to do is come out of this with a report out to the larger group. We don't want a long litany of checklist or laundry list of things. We want a couple of really good ideas to come out of this. And Gary actually is going to help us. Gary Kelly be a bit of a scribe and get through that with us. So let me ask Anesh to talk about homework a little bit.
Well, thank you very much, David. And let me begin by just one more housekeeping item. We are being broadcast live as well. That is why you see the cameras behind us. Those are meant for us to be accessible to those who could not be with us in person. Also, a thank you for those of you who completed an assignment. For those of us from the federal agencies who may not know this, each of our CEO guests was kind enough to complete a homework assignment that actually asked them to prioritize. As to the nature of how we transform customer service, what are the most important levers to pull to generate the greatest returns? We've aggregated the data that came in to that first question, and I'll be demonstrating the results momentarily. What we'll then do is we'll have a conversation about the two biggest themes that emerged. And thankfully, a summary of our homework assignment suggests that we had relative consensus on the two most important themes. So without much further ado, forgive me for the graphic intrusion. I'm going to ask if I could present this to you. This is the graphic that describes the factors that you all rated as being important for improving customer service. Overwhelmingly, establishing a culture of customer service ranked at the top of the list. Shortly thereafter, one that's been near and dear to my heart, how do you actually capture a deep understanding of the customer's needs? This, given what David described as the somewhat of the complexity of the nature of defining the customer in the public sector, allows us to spend a few more minutes there as a wonderful area for thoughtfulness. By the way, while not at the top two, I thought it was incisive to look at the notion of game-changing technologies ranking dead last. I thought was just an interesting teaching point, because I think, as the president said, it's not about the adoption of a particular noun, a particular technology type, but it's how you all have built a culture of service and have developed a way through your understanding of the customer's needs to achieve the results. So with this, David, I'll turn it back on to you if there are not any specific questions, and then we can get on with the program.
So let's talk about this notion of a customer-centric service culture. We'd just like to hear from you. Why is it that it was at the top of your list? What do you mean by that, and how do you operationalize that? Let me just open it up. Love to hear some of your thoughts.
You already have a lot of people in your area. There's someone literally a Twitter name, Ranger Craig.
Right.
Different human. but they're ready to start working together to actually tell you how things can be improved. They just need to hear from management that they're going to get some backup in this. There's the recently started Veterans Affairs Innovation Initiative. And that's already beginning to come up with some process results, both in better serving veterans and also in streamlining processes, because they're finding stuff that doesn't need to be done, waste time and money, let's not do it. So the deal is that the culture is already tacitly there. The idea is that get together, there's a number of agencies already using tools which allow people to talk about stuff and then to prioritize it. The next step is to let people know that you're serious about it, because you have a social media message to deliver throughout your agencies and then outside. Frankly, there's already Twitter discussion of this going on. I suspect one of the streaming guys is already using the hashtag I proposed earlier, and something's happening now, and people are paying attention. We need to make a lot of noise about this and enlist the people who are ready to go.
You're mentioning, Craig, that we have in our own workforces folks ready to tell us how to have a more customer-centric culture. So how do we tap into that? What you're saying is perhaps what we... Well, let me ask you all, from your business experience, how do you best tap into that? How do you learn from your own employees what you can do as leaders of your company to reinforce this, you know, the customer first kind of philosophy? Jeff, you have any thoughts?
I mean, it's interesting, when I answered the question, I put the culture as the first, and I had two companies in mind in thinking about it. One is Southwest. I mean, I think Southwest, in my perspective, has taken a hard to differentiate service and differentiated through customer support. And I think the company, as I understand it, has been built with that philosophy. Also, the Walt Disney Company I worked at for a number of years, and they did it. I think part of what you need to do is create an environment where employees are comfortable to tell you what they think. I mean, we've started Some companies you do it anonymously, some companies do it non-anonymously, but this, the fact that you're asking and making it safe for them to make potentially critical observations for you has always been the start to, from my perspective, what then the agenda needs to be to help make that happen.
Yes, maybe ahead, just some language here. Yeah. I don't know that it's employee or customer. I mean, it's just people helping people. I mean, let's just get down to the baseline here, because I think that's what it is. And I think that there is a time, the time has come through tools of many sorts and through an enormous amount of online activity, people are ready to help people. And so as long as you set
Wendy,
then give them the tools, and they will.
Wendy, this is very helpful. In the homework assignment, many of you were kind enough to report tactics or ideas that you had employed to kind of bring that concept home. One of them, Wendy, was your notion of the customer service compact. Would you be kind as to share a little bit about that experience and how that relates?
It's a very simple, you know, set of principles that the company that I lead, Get Satisfaction, established to put forward to their consumers and their companies that use the service to say, look, when you're helping each other, here's the protocol that you might want to use online, right? You want to be open, you want to be transparent, you want to be patient. Very simple principles of helping each other. And that pact really became the foundation for those people who wanted to engage in our service. And they use it, you know, when someone's getting upset or concerned or they're trying to flame each other, they use that and say, remember, this is the principle we're operating under. So it's a very simple set of principles. It's online. It's, you know, people have to sign up for it. They don't have to, but they can sign up for it when they're in the network. It's very straightforward, called a company customer pack.
And how would you sign up for it? I'm sorry.
You'd go onto the site when you're setting up a community for a product or service, and you read it, and it's part of the way, the protocol for communication online.
For, and it sounds like it's translatable to all relationships, actually, in the company as well.
That's right. It started as an internal doctrine, so to speak.
Pam?
Well, I think what's most important is that the culture of customer service starts from the top, that leadership truly believes that customer satisfaction is the most important thing. Enterprise was founded on that basis. We understand that a completely satisfied customer is twice as likely to come back and return as a customer that's just satisfied, or even, you know, even a little bit more than satisfied. So we measure only completely satisfied customers. I think then you have to understand what your customers' needs are and build your plan around your service around what your customers want. Have the Enterprise brand, and 3 years ago we purchased National and Alamo, from Enterprise Holdings, and there are three distinct customer bases, and each customer base would like a different type of service. So we first have to understand what that service is and be able to provide that service. And then I think as important as anything is you have to be able to measure that customer service, and you have to make people accountable for that customer service. So Enterprise, for example, Enterprise has 6,000 locations in the home city around the United States. We measure every single location every month that to a statistically valid customer service number. And each branch is given, or each location is given that number, and they can see the entire country and where they stand compared to every other operation. And we promote only those who are above the corporate average in their customer service scores. So the hardest part is living and dying by the sword, will I say. That is, once we set out that it's an expectation that you have to be above corporate average in your customer service scores, then we have to stick by that. There are times when we have high-level positions where we would look at Dan and say, Dan, you cut it all, and you may be 1 point off the company average, and instinctively, would have promoted you before to that position, but we wouldn't. We stick by the standard. We live by the standard because we truly believe from top to bottom that customer satisfaction is the most important, is what's most important to our company, because we know that that's the most important thing to our growth as a company.
May I ask you a quick question? I'm sorry.
When you, how did you make your decision to go from when Enterprise was was first established, it, you know, you made a decision not to locate at airports, but more in neighborhoods.
In the home city.
Yeah. Then you made another decision, which I thought was fascinating, which is pick people up at their home. Was that a part of your customer service surveys, where how did you find out that that feature was important to your users?
It was actually an innovation by an employee. An employee wanted, we were very decentralized. We give a lot of autonomy to our local locations and our branch managers. And this particular branch manager decided to do that on his own many, many, many years ago, 25 years ago probably, as a way to grow the business. Because we promote from within, we pay on performance, and this employee was motivated to grow the business and came up with that as a way to grow the business because people needed to get to the location in order to rent the car.
Did you measure and see whether that would be universally applied or just in the state?
Today, we might probably do that back then. We were small and nimble, and it just kind of grew as a good idea.
Yeah.
And then we discovered it worked and worked very well. And now it's, you know, foundation of what we do.
I mean, one of the issues, if I can do this,
sure.
Mm-hmm.
That we face is how do you establish level of customer service that you want, and then how do you develop what I call adaptation approaches as needs shift, as your customers demand, as your customers move from saying I'm satisfied with this, but they want more. How do you detect the more? Where do you find out what that more looks like and feels like, and how do you how do you ask that question?
Well, two ways. We do the surveys every month, and we have an outside company do the surveys. It's a very simple. Two-question survey over the phone. That would be three questions, and that is, if there is a problem, can we have somebody contact you? Would be the third question. If there is a problem, we always follow up. The local branch will follow up and make sure that customer is satisfied. So we also then keep a log of what those complaints are and look for trends and obviously change with what our customers are telling us. On return, we have particularly at the airports with the handheld, so you're returning, you never go back into the office. On the handheld, there is there's software that allows them to go in and log. If Dan had any problem whatsoever, we would go in and log it right there on return. And that at the end of the day, we look at all of them, first try to make Dan happy, but then at the end of the day, every single day, those branches take a look at what those trends look like. Are there any trends? Did we satisfy every customer, or do we need to do some more follow-up and make sure that we do something different?
Could I ask others to comment on this point, because which is ways to get input from customers? Because this is a special challenge for the federal government. And we have our National Park Service, for example, wants to get feedback and does. But we have all sorts of requirements about what we can ask of citizens. We got Paperwork Reduction Act. We have this whole process at OMB for social survey requirements. Everything has to be gone through a bureaucracy. I want some ammunition from you guys that would help us say we've got there are good ways, quick ways to get customer feedback. You've given some good ideas, Pam. Just like to some more ideas. And I want to come back to what Craig said, and Wendy also inferred on this too. I think that a lot of the customer satisfaction culture is something that you don't necessarily just have to get from the customers. You can get right from your internal workforce, which is a huge, huge deal for us because we tend to have very large workforces and maybe not that orientation. So you want to say something, Craig? Go ahead.
Aside from wanting to make the joke, which Anish senses that I want to, that the deal is that there are some federal regulations, some rules that are in the way of people being, of doing the job,
yeah.
Providing customer service. Fortunately, you have people who have already been working for at least a year on identifying those and working on getting rid of them. They're centered around the Federal Web Managers Council. And they're probably listening to this right now, or at least in the tweets, which also you guys should be doing more of. But the idea is that they've already identified a number of these, which I don't frankly understand.
Right, right.
But you do have those folks.
Sure.
The deal is, I think I need to connect them to David later, part of the effort to make some real trouble. But you do have the people who identified it. You need more folks to get behind that.
Right.
Beyond that, you do need more of the, to get behind some of the agency efforts which are already doing what we're talking about.
Sure.
There's one at the FCC. There's one at the right. state also that I know about.
But tell us from your experience as well, you
Dave, just one thing. We've got a please. Technology that we provide to many of our customers called POSE. So we do a lot of our service-based work over the phone. And when the interaction ends, we offer that customer the ability to go into the technology and basically take an automated survey. And so it's anonymous in the standpoint of, you know, again, they're not talking to a person, but they're providing, you know, answers to the question that are all being done using the technology. And then, of course, you then get that, you get that data, and you're able to analyze that data in you know, almost in real time. So it's a tool that, you know, many of our customers are taking advantage of. So you just take advantage of when you've got that person, you've just completed the service experience.
Right.
Okay, now get a
boom right
know,
away
an immediate real-time read right. on how you did.
Right.
Article 1 has a process that may mirror some of the work that agencies do in that we research the validity of patents. And so we're looking at improving the efficiency of how that's done. And the way that we get customer feedback is to remove the company from the system. Our employees are able to interact directly with our customers and get information. And so in the same way, outside the context of a difficulty about rules, to empower your internal staff to be able to communicate with customers directly as opposed to going through a system or a firewall may help to improve efficiency. And one way to do that is to just open up the dialogue of your customers in an open manner and let them provide feedback to your internal team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would just offer up a similar thought. All of us have cultures, and all of us have a culture of customer service. I think there needs to be depth in each aspect that's considered. For example, and this was Ron's question, you have to define what you want in terms of customer service. And I think in order to do that, you need to know what you are and what you stand for and what you're capable of. And then you need to find some technique to really know your customer. And that was, you know, one of the items on the list. We at Southwest, we have close to 100 million boardings a year. Of those, there's probably 40 million unique persons or less. And I think it is helpful to collect feedback, a lot of feedback, and over a long period of time. And I think you'll understand patterns, and you'll know. You'll know what your customers want. And it's humbling at times, in fact, to find that, no, I really think I understand, only to find out it's the exact opposite when you go to the effort to truly collect feedback. We get unsolicited feedback from our employees and our customers. We do formal surveys after flights. It sounds similar to what you were describing at Enterprise. We do face-to-face customer forums just like this with real people in different locations at different times of the year constantly. So we might do a dozen a year. And after a while, you'll see a pattern. I don't know that it's the kind of thing that you just go out and you have one little research effort and say, okay, now I'm done, mm-hmm. check it off the box. It is a continuous thing. And then I agree with what Pam said, you find a way to measure that. So you make a change, you measure it, make sure that your customers like what you think. But our employees, they're our primary litmus test, and they'll tell us, because it's an intimate customer experience for us where they know instantly whether our customers like something or not. But then you also have to, as you know, there are naysayers, and you have to know when to listen and when to ignore. And anytime anything is new, we have experience that you're going to have some flack and give it 90 days or 6 months and then come back and reevaluate. And so it's just a continuous effort and focus, I think, on customer service. But you have to decide. And for us, we want to be a low fare but also offer great customer service. So how do you interpret that? And I think each agency has to decide. So we interpret that by saying, well, it's more important for us to be on time and have friendly employees, as opposed to offering what I would describe as maybe frills, like we have no first class. So the depth and the definition of who you are and what you aspire to be, I think, is critically important before you can go set off and say, well, let's go and deploy this technology or this technique. And then the only other thing I was going to mention just as an overall comment is, and I don't think that was necessarily the way you all are driving this, but it was nice to see that the game-changing technology was last on the list.
Yeah.
It is an enabler. Most of the gadgets exist, so it's
yes.
not like you have to go out and invent something. I think it's more the human aspect of all of this.
Mm-hmm.
We have a saying, which is we want one version of the truth. So 5 years ago, you all are customers, not necessarily of Southwest, but you all fly. We would have a fare database repeated across our systems, I'll bet you a dozen times. So we would have a reservation system that you would call, make a reservation, we'd have a fare database that would feed that. Then you would go to the airport and you might, in the old days, buy a ticket, we would have a fare database that would drive that ticket.
This is the problem.
One version of the truth. And so I think that one of the things that I was wondering for the government is, as you define your customer, how many interactions do you have with that customer? Is it one customer, or do you have the same person repeated 42 times across the federal government? So that's where we've had tremendous success, I think, is minimizing the single version of the truth so that you don't have to try to keep things in sync. But it's a long, as we all know, it's a long-term prospect to get the foundation in place to be able to get this to subscribe to a vision. So I think the strategy and the depth of what you want to be has to come first.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if I can just pick up on what you're saying, Gary, I think that there's a lot that happens up front in analyzing who your market is and what they're doing. And one of the things, I agree both with what you were saying, Cheryl, and you, Gary, in that having that direct experience, which is trackable, which you can learn from, is important. But I also feel like at a place like Facebook, so I was one of the co-founders of Facebook, and Facebook has over 350 million users now. And Facebook's challenge is not only serving those users' needs whenever they have issues and problems, but also anticipating what they will need in the future. And while I definitely agree that a lot of that, you know, one-on-one interaction can be important, I think that one thing that's sort of been hidden underneath a lot of these different topics is the importance of simple metrics and data. And understanding when someone comes to your website, if the vast majority of users are going straight to their inbox, or if their eyes are going to a certain part of the page, or if they're interacting with their other, with their acquaintances or colleagues in a certain way, then you build out your system to not necessarily reward that behavior, but simply make it easier. So I think that there's a lot that companies and also the federal government can learn just by understanding what people want. So if if the people who are coming to the State Department website are looking to how to find out how to get a passport, that's not one click away from state.gov, that's a problem. I think that there's a lot that you can learn in those metrics before you ever get to the point where you're actually having one-on-one conversations so that you can decrease, hopefully, the overall number of conversations you have
that's
to have.
That's a really important point, Chris. You know, just finding out how our websites are being used. And not that we have the best websites. We've got nothing like Facebook, that's for sure. But we do have a lot of hits. And try to sort of diagnosing, trying to figure out where people are going or trying to go. Craig?
There are already people discussing what's going on in agencies or companies in social networking sites. Facebook is one, Twitter.
Right.
There's others. Now Foursquare is up and coming. And the idea is that to give your employees some training, and this is something I do on a daily basis, because I'm a customer service rep, I'm not a CEO. And you just go to where people are and talk to them, either in person or virtually. You do need to give them some training for things like making sure they don't say the wrong thing, at least not frequently. Eventually, someone is going to say the wrong thing. But if it's infrequent, then you can tolerate it. Have people go out, say the right thing, and do it visibly, and it is working. And I see it literally every day.
You know, one thing I haven't heard yet, you know, we've been talking about also the customer service culture.
Yeah.
And I think what's so important is that it hasn't been touched on is recruiting. I think everyone here will tell you that, you know, my experience when I go to Enterprise, you have a smiling face, someone excited to greet you and say, hey, welcome to Enterprise, how can I help you today? They're recruited that for that purpose. You've got to have the right people in the right position, so all your customer interfacing personnel have the right attributes. And so when we looked at, you know, as we've grown as an organization, you know, we're known for outstanding customer service, our response time, our speed of delivery. And so when folks know our company for that, for those attributes, well, how did that happen? It's because we recruited those individuals that had those attributes. Of course, they then integrate into the organization well, and you train them into all of your ways. But the recruiting process is also very key. So there could be also the evaluation looking at those critical roles in which they're heavily in customer service roles. Are those the right people? I mean, of course, we have back office people that are fantastic in those roles, and we say often, well, maybe that person would be the best person to have in front of a customer. But we have other people that are fantastic in front of customers. But again, we recruited for those skill sets, and then we, of course, continue that with training and experiences.
If I may, Dan, in your homework, you had a very kind way of thinking about how your employees are perceived or think of themselves on customer service.
I think picking up on what Dave was saying, we changed about 10 years ago from hiring people who were good at unloading trucks to hiring people that had the right attitude. And we teach them how to unload trucks. That wasn't too hard. And the attitude is really important. And part of what we do is preach all the time that without the customer, you know, we're all unemployed. So, you know, when you think about that every day in the store, it's pretty impactful.
Thank you.
One thing I'm curious to know just from the rest of the group, I feel like, you know, these are talking about really different companies here. Enterprise provides, you know, services and cars. Facebook is just a website, and you all are in a lot of different places. But I feel like one of the things that I've noticed is that we can talk about having a culture of customer service and a lot of different skills, and I'm curious to know what some of those skills are that you look for. But at the end of the day, I feel like it really just comes down to listening. Because if you listen well, whether it's someone working at Trader Joe's or Enterprise or wherever, then you're able to understand where the customer's coming from, why they're having a problem, maybe why they're not having a problem, but then actually respond in a way that is substantive. I mean, at a place like Facebook, even though it's very different because we don't, you know, see our customers face-to-face like Trader Joe's employees do, but from the very start, it's been as much about listening to what users want as and what users don't want as it is about anything else. And just about a year ago, Facebook changed its terms of service, and users were upset because they thought that Facebook was claiming to own all of their data. And, you know, Facebook responded by listening to what they prefer, and we completely changed the terms of service, let the users vote on it, and they chose their own rules for their website, which was unprecedented at the time. But it gets back to this key fundamental value of listening. And so I guess I'm just curious to know if that's just something that a couple people have put at the center, or if that's something that
we have a
happens across
the listening board. Process. It sounds very much like what Southwest has. It's a process that works with our customer service people and some hard data, and it's also listening that we ask all employees to do, and it gets fed in, and it's about a 2-hour every other Friday meeting.
It's huge, yeah.
And we make decisions and change kind of on the fly based on that, you know, all the way from a product to be brought in or a store location to look at.
Yeah.
For us, it's listening is kind of like a second line of defense, and the first thing we do is just put ourselves in the shoes of our customers and just very aggressively try and defend that experience for them and anticipate the problems that they're going to run into. So, like, one of the tactics that we've used is to I work for a company called Groupon. It's like in discounts, gift certificates, that kind of thing. So we say, what are the things that people expect to hate about this industry? And we look at those as opportunities to define ourselves as leaders in customer experience. So people expect the experience to have some kind of a catch, So we take any kind of terms and we put them front and center so that people see them before they buy. Like people expect to buy the thing and then get stuck out to dry, it doesn't work. So we put a phone number on our coupon so that people can call and actually talk to a person. So we could be terrible in 80 different ways, but just the fact that we do those two things puts us on a good start with our customers.
We have, Open Table is an interesting challenge where we have two discrete set of customers and we're enabling their interaction. So customer one is this restaurant, the small business owner. We have about 11,000 of those. And, you know, we typically get information from that customer largely through our field force. Half our company works out in the field. They interact with these people daily. So that's one set of customers. The other are the consumers who use the website. And that becomes much more quantitative and behavioral. We typically will go from on that side, you start by doing very qualitative things like asking your web team and asking a focus groups of customers what they think about specific issues. You define the question set and then you go do quantitative. The ultimate quantitative is behavioral. We recently bought one of Shantanu's products called Test and Target, where you can literally make slight changes in the website and watch how different people interact with different levels of success through your flows. So 5% of the people will see a new implementation. We just changed our search results page, and 5% of the people would see a new implementation, and we were able to quantify how many successfully completed their behavior, existing implementation versus new, read the data, put more sampling through, and then ended up being comfortable that change was additive and changed it. That whole process started with qualitative questions to consumers and ended up being just massively behavioral.
Interesting. Yes, Wendy.
In terms of some lever points, and an issue started the conversation with this, I think we as consumers and as people trying to work with each other in many ways, public and private ways, the levers are significant right now. There are a couple that are significant that I think should be design principles for us in any kind of business. One is social media. I mean, people are talking publicly, period. They are online and they're talking. It gives us an ability to listen in a way we've never been able to listen before. And I come from a very traditional software background, enterprise software, lots of processes, CRM. There were steps galore. We had devices and databases, and it was very complex and very expensive. And I've been immersed into this world of social media meets crowdsourcing meets customer relationship. It is fascinating to me how those lever points can not just reduce the cost of service and support, but completely enhance real-time customer feedback without very sophisticated survey tools. It's amazing. I mean, if you go to NikeRunning.com, you see customers in a community talking about their use of this Nike Running device, and the feedback would cost, in my world where I came from, millions of dollars to get that feedback. And this is being gathered right now on the spot for a very small amount of money, and then the company can decide how they want to curate that content, what they want to do with it. But I think we as a government, we need to look at ways to design principles fast, easy, social, take advantage of the fact that there are so many people online talking anyway, inside Facebook, inside many different networks, as well as on your own website. So we've got to harness that power, and it doesn't take a lot of sophisticated technology to do it. That's why it's good to see it last one. It takes leadership, as we've heard about, and just making sure we make ourselves available throughout the experience that the people that are going to parks want to have. And they're going to go online to look for these things. I go online to look for where I'm supposed to go from the hotel here. Yeah. I don't like stop and ask people. And my team has taught me not to print out stuff because that looks old.
Right? Wendy, these last several comments has been a terrific shift into the second category, which is how do you truly understand the customer's need? I really hope we could spend some time here capturing some tactics because, frankly, this is a very practical question for us in the public sector. How do we understand what the person who needs public services truly needs? What are the tools, tactics, ideas? Maybe it's a methodology, a philosophy. What are the ways your firms have done that example? Is it spot project driven? Is it more systemic? following a community, as you described. Your homework has been rich with ideas that we can surface, but I'm curious if you would be kind enough to help think through that question. What is it that we can learn from you tactically to capture customer behavior, applicant behavior for public services might be a better way of describing it, how we iterate, the way you talked about testing and revising your website. Gary, you actually kind of went there first when we were in the culture question. Would you be kind to maybe say a word about this?
Be happy to, and I agree with all the comments that you all are making. We use all of those techniques as well. And we've got a terrific blog, you know, so we get just to what you said. Sometimes we'll actually pose the question. You know, we'll get a long string of feedback, which is often remarkably accurate. In other words, if you used that technique to listen versus doing something that you thought might be a little bit more scientific, it is interesting to me how often it comes back almost exactly the same. But I always like to do a couple of different views because I'm a little suspicious whether you've got a biased universe. But what we have done is we have typically started with, I think what we've all done is you get a group of people together and you toss them the problem and you see what kind of solutions are offered up. We do that with customers one-on-one, and we always, I love Pam's example. I think most things that we have done at Southwest to innovate here over the last decade have been some employee's idea. It's always hard to find who had the original idea to do whatever it was, but we always involve our employees. And most times we're successful when we implement change. Sometimes, you know, it's they feel it's more of a cram down, but I would prefer that much less because we think that we'll be much more successful in delivering our service if we get them on board. But we do take our time with that, and we take change. We've tried to move deliberately, and that sometimes invites a lot of criticism. I mean, there's a lot of pressure on Wall Street to produce right now. And we're trying to build a company, which doesn't happen in a quarter. So we do go through things in a deliberate fashion, which I think is very important. Back to, you just have to know who you are and what you want to be. Otherwise, you can be a decade down the road and it's all screwed up, you know. And I think that avoiding that is very important.
Can I ask, follow up, Gary, with a very practical question? You've got a very large organization, and some other companies here do. Many of you don't have that many employees. But for those who do, we have 70,000 employees in the Department of the Interior.
Right.
We want to get our employee input. But I think there's certainly some history at our department of asking employees, and then what happens to that? You know, how do you do it in a way that you don't reinforce the wrong view, which is they're just going through the motions, they don't really care, you know, they're overwhelmed by the input, nothing ever happens. I mean, is it smarter to do a more bite-sized approach, a targeted approach, than sort of a blanket request? I mean, I'm just curious if you have any guidance to suggest there.
24 years at Southwest Airlines, so I've tried it all, and we have 35,000 employees, and so inevitably, you know, we'll hit the home run, where if there's an overwhelming positive customer response, our employees are going to like it. Mm-hmm. If it's not quite that easy to judge, if it moves people's cheese, then we're going to get a lot of feedback. And so we've had successes and we've had failures there. You can't poll 35,000 people.
Right.
And you can't, many things can't be submitted to a vote. So I'm very sympathetic to that, and I'm a student of that. So I don't know that we have all the answers there. We do the best we can to invite participation. Then we do the best we can to explain why we're doing things. And there is a very heavy investment in leadership. So just about every change initiative that's underway at Southwest Airlines, I am personally involved with. And to try to delegate that, and I've seen that in the past, it just doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
Because as soon as there's flack internally, the leader says, forget it. And I'm sure that's happened to everybody in the room. So all the more reason that you just have to have a strategy that you're going to see through. And there are going to be mistakes, and you just have to be big enough to admit the mistakes and say, you know what, you're right. But I think part of the listening, in other words, is saying sometimes you have to say no. No, we're not going to do it that way. We're going to do it this way, and here's why, which takes a lot of effort and a lot of time and a lot of energy.
David, if I may, yes, David.
We're a customer service agency. I've got 50,000 customers. I have 50,000 people that send me a little bit of their paycheck every week. And what they're looking for from us is communication about what's going on in the world that affects their lives. What are we doing to protect their contracts? And then that's the broad base. But those individuals that are in stress, where they have a manager that's taking some sort of personnel action against them, or they're being fired or suspended, they need somebody from the union to communicate with them. So we're really communicators. The challenge for labor unions is really to figure out a way to keep our client base happy. And so we're in the same business as a lot of you folks. Now, to answer the second question is, how do you get public employees to buy into a process where they want to be innovative and what have you? You've been president of Southwest for 24 years. The federal employees have had how many chiefs in the last 24 years? And every 4 or 8 years, you have somebody come in and say, we want your input. You know, we're the second, third, fourth, and fifth coming of Christ, and we're going to change the way things, and your input's important, and we know you work hard, and then they take away your benefits and what have you. So it's very difficult for a new administration to come in and to have anybody believe what it is you're trying to sell the workforce, because you don't have the stability, you don't have a long-term history of actually listening and rewarding the employees. So. What the president did last week or the week before, where they had this project about how do we save money, and the president brought in one of my members from the Colorado VA hospital, who had an idea of letting the people that are leaving the VA take their medicines with them. And it seems like a very simple thing, but you know, all these meds now come on strips, and if somebody gets checked in, they give them a strip, and they were leaving, and they were throwing the medicine away, only to get it from the pharmacy in charge of the VA anyway. So, but the president did a great job in highlighting his time with that person. So I think that the message has to be that the people are important and that it has to be consistent. He can't just, and you can't just do that, you know, once a year or once every 2 years. It's got to be every 3 or 4 months, bringing somebody in and saying, this is something that one of your fellow federal workers has done that saves us money, and spent some time walking around the White House with the president. I mean, it had a very positive impact upon my members in the VA that this person was plucked out of Grand Rapids, Grand Junction, Colorado, and flown to the White House to talk about their innovation. The other thing is that a lot of our members work in very stressful situations and literally are overworked. You know, everybody talks about the registries of motor vehicles where you go get your license or register your car. And a new governor comes in, the first thing they do is they lay off 10% of the help. Well, it's the same number of customers. And we all know that you can only, whether it's Trader Joe's with somebody at the checkout line or National, how many people can you process an hour? And then the clients of the registry or Trader Joe's or National gets frustrated by having to sit there. So management has to give the employees the tools, and that means other employees also, to actually fulfill the function you want them to fulfill. And the last thing is, as far as interacting on the web or on voicemail, at the end of the day, there has to be a way to talk to a person, because not everybody is as tech savvy as somebody on Facebook. My kids make me look like, you know, real fools. I say something in Chattanooga, and my kids that night are saying to me exactly what I said in Chattanooga, and they live in Massachusetts. So, yeah, I mean, but you need a person at the end of the day to make your customers happy, which makes it easier for your employees.
Maybe the government in particular, right? Because we tend to be an anonymous face to a lot of, you know, America.
Right.
Ron?
Mine's a little different twist. It's kind of good seeing you again.
Yeah, good to see you, Ron.
From looking at some of the corporations at this table that I'm familiar with, you've managed to marry the interest of your employees with the customer. I'm really fascinated about how you did that. Is it part of the compensation? Is it part of the review? Was it recruitment? I mean, what were the approaches where you married that customer's interest with the employees that you have?
I can answer that one. I think it's really important, first of all, that you do hire the right person that is a customer friendly, that likes to be around people, kind of person. But then they have to be motivated to provide the best service every single day, day in and day out. Because sometimes you just really don't feel like it, even if you know you're the type of person that normally would be. You have to be able to measure how well they're doing it, and you have to hold them accountable. And you have to hold them accountable in a way that's important to that person. For us, that's promotion. That all of our, we have 75,000 employees, they all care about customer satisfaction because somehow they are all tied back to that number that they get every month that says this is how well your operation did in customer satisfaction. And within a local branch, they'll measure themselves. Some of our offices on their own, so you have to give them, you need to keep them accountable, but then you also need to give them the autonomy and the ability to change things and do some different things on their own and try some new things. And some of our own just local operations, because they are now motivated to do better every single day, will gather their employees every morning and say, how do you think all of you did yesterday in customer service? And they hold a vote, and they vote the one that didn't do the best, and they talk about why, just things that they've noticed. So you have to measure, and then you have to hold them accountable.
Say that last piece again.
You have to measure.
No. So the you brought everyone the vote.
The vote.
Yeah. Who sits around the table? What is it?
The employees of that particular office.
In that office.
Yes, that was, and this was something that our employees came up with, that spread throughout some of our other offices. But every morning they talk about customer service. You know, how do you think customer service was yesterday? How do you think each one of all of you did? And is there anything we could have done better? And then they hold a vote, and they vote the best and the worst.
They vote you off the island, I guess. Huh?
It's kind of like that. I think it came about that time when that show came out.
Wow. May I ask a question about transitions? Many of you are describing best practices. That's why many of you are sitting around this table and advising. But have any of you had to inherit an area where it was sort of not best practice, and you had to shift it to best practice in orienting towards customer service? I'm curious if you have any insights around the change, how you went from a culture that perhaps may not have been as focused on this issue, and it started to shift because tactically several of these measures were introduced. Is there anyone that has any of that experience or would wish to comment on that subject?
I have the negative experience of working with some very large corporations which talked about how much they wanted to hear our feedback and didn't follow through. What people hope they think they're seeing in the current administration is that people will suggest stuff and then management will follow through. I think it was the SAVE Award, the woman from the VA somewhere in the Midwest, the idea is that not only did the VA follow through, but that she went to the White House to get a handshake from the president. So the follow through is the big part. If people see recognition and follow through, then they'll do more of it, and then do more recognition and follow through. And that's the way to change the culture. It is a human thing, but just think about us all. When you maybe complain about some customer service you do or don't get, oh, let's say through the phone company, if what you say gets some results, then you're happy. If you don't think you're going to get any results at all, you're never even going to try. And right now, the idea is to, for citizens like us, to challenge you with, to get some results on things. We're actually seeing results now. The press isn't covering it, but that's a separate problem, which one may be working on. But the deal is just listen to us and then deliver, and that'll go far. And by us, I mean both citizens, but also the people who work for you.
But I think you want to start small. You want to pick something that you really know you can make progress on quickly, and then over-communicate, back out to the organization. I mean, and Gary made the point, it's all about leadership, but it's constantly then communicating, how you're doing, so that you start to create some momentum and change in that culture. So then pick the next item and then pick the next one. But again, go at a pace that, that allows you to make sure that you can be making meaningful progress against the things that you're picking, and then, you know, start to generate some momentum over a period of time.
I mean, I agree with that completely. One thing that works really well is transparency. I mean, you mentioned people getting cynical. You're asking me again my opinion, you know, what happens to it. We found that when you ask the opinion, you have to give the answers of what it is, including all the bad news. So, I mean, you know, typically when you ask things, answers range from we do this pretty well to we need improvement in this. So, I mean, we typically will show the employees exactly how they consider their experience at the company, and then said, okay, here, you know, these couple we've got to live with for A, B, or C, but these we're committed to try to address, hold us accountable. Next year, we're doing the survey again. Same question. We are committing to improving that, you know, this set of results. That sharing of the bad news as well as the good is one way to start, you know, transparently start to get some trust in the system.
Yeah, absolutely. Right.
I don't know if this is exactly on your point, but you mentioned this earlier, so I thought I would weave this in real quick, because I did want to mention self-service, which is just a way of life for many of you, but I think for the government, we got a long way to go. So, but Southwest is, and actually I haven't been president for 24 years, so thank you.
Southwest,
we're the most unionized airline, by the way.
There you go.
So,
there's people left to be unionized. I'll be talking to you.
Would you represent me?
Yeah.
I'm the lowest paid guy. The company was founded on simplicity and speed and ease and no hassle, and that's 1971. So by the 80s, when I got there, you had to stand in multiple lines to ultimately get on a Southwest flight. And I was investor relations saying that this is what we, and I had people telling me, no, you're not. You're not easy to get on. So that was kind of a wake-up call for me personally. So we have gone through, I think, a transformation that fits what you were describing. However, the culture of customer service was there. It's just the execution got worse and worse and worse. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the things that we
How do you measure execute? How did you get that feedback?
Well, I agree that there are metrics that were pretty easy, but it was as simple as at the beginning of this decade, for those of you who flew on us, you stood in line at the gate to surrender your ticket and exchange it for a plastic boarding pass. Mm-hmm. So for many people, it was the third line that they stood in before they actually got on the airplane. You talk about a waste of time. That's not easy. That's a hassle. It raises the anxiety. So we have hired for the right attitude. We want to please our customers. So we've tried to streamline that entire process. And as you all know now, that's all a distant memory. But it was only a decade ago. But it's this notion that you mentioned of self-service. So most people, it's make it easy for me. I think Andrew mentioned this earlier. Put yourself in the shoes of the customer. We all know that they want things to be easy. It needs to be simple. Therefore, it needs to be intuitive. And there have been tremendous advancements so that you can go and have social media or make your own booking or tweet or whatever it might be. And so to the extent that the government could do the same thing and provide that self-service, I think our society would prefer that.
That's right.
It would certainly be more efficient for government. So if you go back to 1995, we were one-third the size that we are today. We had almost 8,000 reservation agents, and they were doing 60% of the bookings on Southwest Airlines. Today, we're quadruple in size and probably have 2,000 reservation agents.
Lowered cost.
85% of our customers don't want to call to make a simple booking. They want to go online. It's easy, but we have an easy product. We have a well-understood brand. We have an easy website to use. It meets people's needs. So that was part of our let's get back to our roots about making it simple for our customers. And that's one that you know, we feel like it's been a success.
And self-serve shouldn't have a bad name.
Exactly.
I mean, okay, it should be a better experience.
It should
cases.
Be a bit, I mean, it's, with all the tools available and with the culture of transparency and openness.
But if you do want to talk to a person, you
right.
want to make that available.
Of course.
So if you
course.
Call
so
our rest center, we'll answer the phone.
I did
have to ask Craig. If you've tried to call the phone company,
bad,
there's nobody
right?
to talk to.
Especially right now, because people are used to that as long as they have the tools to do it with, right? And that they feel that they can get help from each other or from the employee
right.
of the agency or the company they're interacting with.
One thing just real quickly to go back to how to sort of proceduralize all this customer service internally. I feel like there has been an evolution in technology to a point now where you can put in one centralized location, whether it's available just internally to employees or whether it's available to everyone else. What are the biggest problems that you're working on? What's your plan to address them? And then solicit feedback from people inside your company. I think this is, you know, technically speaking, a simple dashboard which keeps people up to date about what are the strategic priorities of the company, what the projects are that are in place to address them, and then opportunity to give feedback. It sounds almost overly simple, but just having one place where people can go and peruse and learn and speak at any time, and not in necessarily a public face-to-face way, but in a way that is comfortable. They can do it, you know, from their computer at work or from at home. I think that can be really, really powerful for processing good ideas and helping, you know, employees feel like they're part of the process, because it actually does make them part of the process. That's been the case at just about every place that I've been a part of. The more that information can be consolidated and easy to use, the more efficient the customer service can be.
And during the transition time, it's a wonderful opportunity for your employees or the company to reach out to your customers in the sense of using your customers as a virtual workforce. We've heard about crowdsourcing, to not only provide feedback on the services you provide, but to provide feedback on how to make your services more efficient, in effect, how to build a business model that will best serve them. And so
how do you do that?
Well, Article 1, like Jeff, has a multi-customer platform. We do research for our clients, companies who are interested in research, and we tap that research from our virtual workforce. We crowdsource it. So our internal work is made more efficient by one set of customers, which is our crowdsourcing partners. And so we directly treat their work as the most efficient way for us to produce our company's work product. And maybe to add something a little innovative, we incentivize our virtual workforce monetarily and through other recognition incentives. A way to apply this to the government can be to give recognition, a very formal recognition structure, to the agency's employees. And then here's a really interesting notion. If the virtual workforce application to customers yields operating cost reduction, is there a potential to pass that back to customers or to taxpayers? That's a really interesting notion.
So there's a model in the Valley now, a company called Blue Lithium, that is a social media platform that lets... Blue Lithium.
Man, we're getting really creative on the names.
Hey, at least you can spell it.
Blue Lithium?
It provides a platform that lets a company's customers answer the customer support questions on their website. So you go to Dell.com, and you have product issues on Dell products. The first line of response right now are Dell fanatics who are not paid by the company. They're just enabled. They care about Dell. They're product champions. They are paid primarily in recognition. That's the guy who answers the really hard questions. And it's a volunteer effort. And what the companies have found, the CEO says, is better service, faster delivered, and it's clearly different economics. You have a volunteer workforce answering it on your behalf and with great passion, because they're doing it because they're volunteer.
Mm-hmm.
So it sounds goofy, but it's being used by a ton of technology hardware companies.
And you transform one of your customer bases or your citizens into stakeholders. And as stakeholders, they're more invested and they have more patience for a transformatory process.
Yeah, a lot of sites will use just regular old discussion boards to get people to help you out each other. We do it in a very minor way. Again, what we do is very simple. If you look at some of the, well, especially when it comes to TV, either the hardware or the programs, get discussion boards, look at discussion boards for those like AVS forums, and you'll see people helping each other out in it. The challenge is, how do you get people excited about their government for this?
You know,
you have a question, Andrew?
Well, I just wanted to comment. I think that the fact that the culture of customer service rated so highly speaks largely to the fact that it's kind of as simple as that. Like, there's not a lot of contention among this group about what you do. In a lot of sense, it's really straightforward. Like, customer service was not something that was hard for us to figure out at Groupon, the right thing to do. So I'd like to better understand, like, what very specifically are the problems that you guys are running into that you just can't overcome?
We got a week.
I
gotta go see my orthodontist and my orthodontist is in Seattle, so I can get my customer service because my wires are detached. So I have to excuse myself. I'd love to stay, but I want my wires reattached. So
all right,
please
no excuse
Thank
me. You,
Bill.
Thank
you. This may be a great opportunity, Bill, if you'd like to chime in as the lead of one of our largest agencies that touches probably more Americans than almost any other. I don't know what the latest statistics are, but pretty big race. I don't know if you'd like to share a word or two about Andrew's request. Thank you, Ron.
Well,
thanks,
first,
Ron.
Let me just thank all of you. David and Anish have done that, but just personally, because it's extremely helpful just to hear the conversation and to try to apply it. Our department is really, I suppose, more like a holding company. We have 10 operating divisions, the National Institutes of Health doing biomedical research, so who are those customers? Possibly researchers. The Food and Drug Administration, which is regulating companies. So its customers are in an entirely different kind of context. Indian Health Service, you know, is providing care to people. So we're sort of all over the place. And one of the challenges that, you know, that we'll face as managers is it's going to be different. You know, the customer culture will be different in each of those places. And so a lot of what we do, too, is, you know, we're doing things for people as opposed to trying to sell them something.
That's right.
So it's a very different mentality. And I tell you, it just is going to take some thinking about how to apply a lot of these ideas. I think they're applicable, though, in many ways. And I think one of the things that I've really taken out of here is that we need to do a much better job of talking to our own employees or getting their ideas about how we can improve things. We've got our Chief Technology Officer and our Chief Information Officer here, and they've both led a really interesting process inside the department of asking people about how we can use technology to improve outcomes, how we can use information technology to, you know, to better serve people and to be more efficient, and just trying to get ideas about how we can innovate the way we do our work. But I think it's and maybe it's just me, but Todd and Mike, you all might add if you want. It's a different thinking process than it sounds like you all go through, because we're not really selling anything to anybody. But we clearly are trying to accomplish something and with the people that we're working with. And so I just need to give some thought to, and David, I'd love to hear your thoughts about this too, because it's...
Well, you know, I think it's a profoundly important question, because all of you...
Let me just say one thing.
Sure.
Like, what value do you get out of good customer service then? Like, what's in it for you to give good customer service, do you think?
Well, improving healthcare, improving health outcomes, identifying, providing H1N1 vaccine. Now, that's been something that's, not something we do every day.
But there's customer feedback. We get customer feedback. You know, we get it any number of ways. I was going to joke earlier. You know, Congress will give us customer feedback on behalf of you know, Mr. and Mrs. Q public if we're not providing good services. Everyone is paying taxes every year. There's a lot of money that's going out of everyone's paycheck, and folks have a right to and expect to have value for that, and where they interface with the government, whether it be the Indian Health Service or HUD or Interior or whatever, or the passport office, that's their window on how their taxes are being spent. But I'll say I think that I think that we need to spend more time on identifying our customers and the expectations that we should have with them, they should have of us, and that's appropriate. And I think to some extent, this gets back to the technology discussion. We got a bunch of CIOs here. We have a huge budget. I have to tell this guy in the federal government how much money we spend on technology, and we don't spend a lot of it
well. That would be $76 billion.
$76 billion. And what I'm hearing from you all is, and you showed it in your homework, right? The technology thing is at the bottom, not because it's the least important, but it's the tactic, if you will, to implement the strategy that you have developed up here. So I think a lot of the federal government has not developed the strategy up here. So we're all about spending money on cool things, you know, and buying new computer systems but without a clear sense of what we're looking to get out of that technology.
So can I ask a question?
Yeah.
So the money for technology are in the individual budgets of the agencies?
Yes.
And all the employees are in the individual agencies?
Yeah. Yes.
So you might be the head of technology, but you might not have anybody working for you.
That's actually true.
And just because the Department of the Interior wants to do something that's contrary to HHS, I mean, what we've just done in Massachusetts is taken all the IT people and put them in one department.
Yes.
So they work for the head of IT.
Yes.
So you can have a common mission, so we're not looking at Dell computers here, the contract to IBM computers over there and what have you. But and we represent all those IT people, and of course, you know, when they started this transition, everybody was up in arms. It's like, how's it gonna affect my life and who do I work for now? But as time's gone on over the last year, people are really into it because they are saving money and they have a common purpose, and they're coming up with programs that not only serve HHS but Interior or the State Departments like this.
I mean, that's an example of a profoundly important and difficult. Often that's the right answer, but then we have a situation where you have the National Park Service with a very different need from in terms of technology flowing from their, you know, their customer interface than you might have over here with Bureau of Land Management.
All the department heads in Massachusetts said too.
Right. Well, anyway,
may we?
Final.
David's gonna do a quick wrap up, but my poor attempt at trying to highlight a key set of themes, I just have four that I've captured, but I want to make sure I did get it right or wrong, but just want to share them to make sure I get at least some sense of the common dialogue. One of the most fascinating conversations in the beginning was how we linked service performance to our HR tools, whether it be in the recruitment cycle or in the promotion cycle. And so there was a set of themes around, sort of tactically speaking, how one embeds that into the DNA of the organization. Second, there was a great deal about, I don't want to call it hardwiring results reporting and sharing, but that notion of transparency. What are you listening? What are you doing about what you've listened to? That conversation, how to make sure that there is someone on the other end knowing that message has been heard and that there's a reaction and a response, so some version of that set of ideas. The third was, frankly, making sure that you incorporate the values of the customer in the design of the work that you're actually doing. So we talked a little bit about how some of the innovations came from employees learning from their customers' needs, and then those scaled when they worked. And basically, in a sense, as a design principle, ensuring that customer need is a factor in the design principle, which is going to be a very useful concept as we think about how we roll out programs. And then last but not least, there is something interesting about the notion of virtual workforce. Frankly, everyone in this room knows we're facing significant budget deficits. We really cannot just hire thousands of more employees to accomplish our goals, despite the demands growing for services. So the ability of allowing citizenry to help each other answer questions and essentially offload some of the work that would otherwise be done by a federal employee, if we physically can't find ourselves in a position of growth, how we think about that idea of extending the customer service activity from applicant to a certain, you know, I apply for a benefit here and I'm going to explain to somebody else how to go through that process in a way that works. I don't know if I've captured all of the broad themes. Is that a reasonable, Gary?
I think it was very good.
correct me? Craig?
I would just say, I just wouldn't lose sight of, again, this whole self-service concept, and every government agency has to have high volume, predictable, routine tasks that today could be immediately automated, which will take some pressure off the system to allow you to put people against the interactions with customers that are the most value added. So you know, every agency has to have, you know, literally millions and millions of those kinds of transactions happening every day that immediately should be done with automation. And the point Gary made, in many cases, technology ends up being a better experience for people. They would prefer to self-serve on those kind of predictable transactions.
Last word for Craig and then David so that we get you to the closing session.
I think I may have heard Bill volunteer his team for maybe another internal innovation kind of deal.
Yeah.
I'd be willing to come into town again like I did for the veterans to help make it happen.
Done. Sold.
And we could do the social media thing.
Let's do it.
You know, as long as it's before the summer, because I really don't want to be in Washington, you know, during the summer.
Just 30 seconds for the rest of you who don't understand what happened. The president in August asked the 19,000 frontline workers of the VA, what ideas do you have to cut the benefit processing time? Because it takes almost, I don't even want to say how many months, much more than it should, to process the benefit claims. Out of these 19,000 ideas, each of the 57 regional field offices then mined them, put together a 2-to-3-page business plan, submitted them to Washington, and we had essentially a panel of judges. Craig served on that panel. Secretary Shinseki picked 10 of those ideas. More than half of them didn't actually cost a nickel. There were just policy changes that were getting in the way, and those are being implemented now across early 2010. That's the idea that Craig is referencing, that was this innovation initiative that basically all in cost us a whopping maybe $2,000 of web programming time, and I think that was the extent. I mean, this is not a very expensive endeavor. David, would you like to make sure
I think you've done a great job. One other observation I'll make that I took out of this, coming from Gary, and this is somewhat of a cultural shift I think the feds need to do. We need to learn from you, Gary, and others, that we tend to be, in part because of congressional oversight and just sort of the being in the public eye, very conservative about things, and that means that even things like how you get information from employees, from customers, has got to be done thoroughly, you know, public notice, you know, all this process. What you guys have learned is, you know, you don't have to get perfect knowledge, right? Get snippets of knowledge from all sorts of different areas and go with it. And that is not in the DNA of the federal government. But this conversation has been so good because, you know, that's where the social networking can help. But again, you got to that's the tactic to get strategy implemented. Listen, yeah. Which is that the big idea is let's get more information and let's not be stymied until we've done every process possible to make sure got the right answer, et cetera.
And David, the same tools that this administration used to get an office should be leveraged to improve customer service.
Yes.
Right? Customer service is the new marketing, and this administration could really leverage those tools right now at a low cost and high value.
So here's a homework assignment. I hate to even say this. Go on DOI.gov's website today, and then go on it tomorrow. I'm not sure exactly when tomorrow. Do you know, Andrew, when our new website is going up? Noon tomorrow. We have a great new media person who worked on the Obama campaign, who we're working with. But I don't want to put too much pressure on it because you're trying to move the Titanic. Okay,
you're on TV though.
Maybe the Titanic isn't the right word, but anyway.
Thank you.
Anyway.
Thank you all.
We're gonna huddle with Gary for a couple minutes, and then we're all gonna go back and hear sort of report backs.
Okay.
And if you don't mind, I think maybe Shelley and others could help direct people back to the same room we were in, so that you have access to the time to get down there and all the rest. Thank you.